Well, welcome to our latest episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast. At last, it was only 0-0, City 0, Forest 0, but in the second 45 at least, we had a performance that gave hope for next season. Joining me are Mark, Dave Fevs and Ian. Guys, as we usually do, quick resume of the game in no more than 30 seconds. I'll come to you first, Dave. Good to have you back after a little gap, but your quick summary of the game.
Good to be back. Hope everyone's well. I think a bit of pride was restored today. I think, you know, pride, effort, energy, bit of motivation, bit of professionalism all came out today. Lacking in quality, but maybe we'll get that next week.
Okay. Ian, 30 seconds. Resume of the game.
First half was really poor. Lots of usual stuff, giving away silly fouls, poor first touches. I detest this low block we're playing, particularly at home. I don't think it suits us. Powder puff up front. Nothing sticks. Second half was an improvement, and we were the better side marginally in the second half. But you know, I think we scored one goal in 8 home games or something like that, no doubt Dave will tell us. So yeah, still not good enough, but I think, you know, I think we're about 90% safe. I wouldn't say so, Dave, no, but 90% safe from relegation. I enjoyed watching Masengo play, particularly in the second half. I don't think he was great in the first half.
No. All right, Mark, your quick summary of the game.
Poor for 35 minutes. City's low block allowing Forest to play the ball that it will wide, Knockout getting in several crosses and might on from the right and might in from the left, putting City under pressure. But from that moment onwards, Lansbury's free kick struck the post and City clawed their way back into the game. H&M had his best game in a City shirt. Lansbury worked too. Simpson, good defensively. And City earned a battling point. If low on quality, they got their pride back. And that's something that we're all pleased with.
I think that's the main thing I put on OTIP today, that if we got a performance today, even if we'd lost, you know, and it had been, I don't know, lost 3-2, but twice battled from behind, showed a bit of vigour in front of goal, but came out losers. But as it was a dour game. And as all three of you have said, first half, certainly the first 30 minutes, it was dire. But then it seemed as though we got back into it, started off the second half, and you know, we'll talk about the incidents, but there was obviously a penalty incident as well. It wouldn't have been injustice had we not got all 3 points. All right, let's go and look at this afternoon's lineup. I'll come to you first, Dave. And somebody said your mic's a little bit loud. Don't know whether you can turn it down a little bit on your
testing set. 1-2. Is that better?
Yeah, it's a bit better. It could come down a shade more if you wanted it to. But
okay.
But just try that. I'll come to you first, though, Dave. The starting lineup, it was meant to be one that featured the players. Well, he didn't use what they used to say, players he could trust. But there were 4 changes. Nothing really unpredictable about them, though. What did you think of that starting lineup?
Yeah, I think he pretty much told us which players he felt were the ones that didn't do what he wanted them to do last week. And I think, you know, Pham started last week, he didn't start this week. Nard started last week, didn't start this week. I think that was pretty clear. Sessegnon, I thought he's been okay actually over the last few weeks. He wasn't last week, and he missed out as well. So I thought it was good to see him give Sam Pearson a try, and I think it, you know, it was good to see Naki Wells play down the middle. And you know, we'll talk about his performance a little bit later on, but I think that's where you will get the best out of him if you're going to play him anywhere at all. And it was good to see Zach Viner come back in, who I think has been a little bit unlucky to not play as many minutes under Pearson. And I think maybe versatility was a benefit for him early on the season, but it seems to have counted against him since Pearson's come in. So glad to see he came back in as well today. So, yeah, good. Not surprising. I think it would have been surprising if I'd have seen Naj and Zizou starting.
Yeah, Ian, you made your usual thing on Twitter, a few team suggestions, and you got it broadly right. Would you have changed anything? Or I think you were more concerned about who wasn't available or who wasn't around, even on the bench. Yes, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we've still got 14 players out, not including the two that have already left the club injured. So I don't, until we have a fully fit squad, whatever that looks like. You know, for example, today there was no Marley Watkins, no Nathan Baker, no Taylor Moore. Now, are they, I mean, we've been told Baker's back, he's training, you know, and the Evening Post said, or Bristol Live as they are now, said, well, you know, he could get a go later in the season. There's like five games left, lads.
Yeah.
Five games. We've got people in Bristol, people in Bristol talking like it's October. So, you know, would I have gone with that lineup? No, I don't like Palmer as a wide left player. Play him in the middle, play him as a 10, or don't play him. By the way, I thought he was.
Well, let's get into performances. Let's get into performances later here. Yeah. You know, Dave was saying about.
I didn't really like it. I didn't like it, but I think Pearson didn't have a great deal of alternative if players like Baker and Moore aren't fit.
Still not fit. Mark, your thoughts on the lineup and the inclusion of Conway, Scott on the bench, and a start for Pearson. I mean, it's, you know, these youngsters are starting to feature, aren't they, and may do more between now and the end of the season. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I think it's because he's not afraid to blood youngsters. Although we're going to have to, you know, manage our expectations with Tommy Conway and Sam Pearson, because they haven't played football in the football league level in their careers. Tommy Rowe obviously made a couple of ricks in the last two games. Less we say about that, the better. But being the only left-sided left-back available, he had to play. Danny Simpson defended very well today, but the lack of any wit from those two, apart from, I think, on one occasion with Rowe trying to get on the end of a pass, I think, from Palmer that went out of play. We didn't offer anything really from fullback.
Well, it was an attacking forcer either of them. Yeah,
but it was a good disciplined performance. If lacking in any quality at all, we worked hard. We were just very wasteful in the final third a lot of the time, and that Palmer was really guilty of that.
Semenya went wide, looked dangerous.
That was the good thing.
If we get stuck in to the action, City only had, 25% possession in the opening 25 minutes of the game. And they did have a good chance early on. It was a break when Pearson broke. Wells made a run and made himself available. And when the ball was played, Wells was offside. Personally, me, I thought Pearson, a more experienced player, might have gone on and tried to take it himself because the defenders were worried about Wells. Dave, that was a good chance for City early on and a good bit of early play from the youngster, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think it was a good defensive header by Viner. Initially, I think the ball went up in the air. He was under quite a lot of pressure, and then he sprung Pearson, who ran through. I think he just needed that ball a little bit earlier, Wells. I think it was a good run to either receive it or to take men away for him to cut inside, as you say. And he could have gone in on inside on his left foot. But yeah, you know, I thought some promise shown by him in terms of his direct running today.
And that was, as we say, though, City not getting a lot of the ball, but you don't have to have high possession to be effective. But Forrest came back in. I've got a few chances here for them before City got in their stride. Worrell had a header saved from a free kick. But then, Ian, City seem to get caught like this quite a few times when they're on the attack, and then a quick distribution by Samba, Fangana, and then they got a good player up front. Is it Mitten? He hit the post. But City were on the attack, and then next thing, they're almost going a goal down. How did you see that chance?
Are we talking about?
We're talking about when Mitten hit the post. Mitten hit the post. Yeah.
Yeah. He's always looking to. He's tricky. He's a bit like lighter weight version of Semenya, but he caused us a few problems in the game up there. I think, which in fact, let's be honest, Forrest should have got at least a draw up there, if not beat us, because after the first 25
super show by Bentley, that was, wasn't it, up there?
After the first 25 minutes, they battered us. My concern, I totally agree with Dave, Pearson should have passed that ball earlier or not passed it at all. And he got it wrong, both ways wrong. But as you say, perhaps a more experienced player. Yeah, we haven't got a Cole Skuse who spots the danger and stops the keeper getting the ball out quick to a player that goes wide. But at the moment, we're not, let's be, you know, totally frank, we're not very good. So hopefully we can pick up another point at least at Wednesday next week. And looking at it now, a lot of the sides down the bottom have got 5-6 games left. They're at least 14, if not more, points behind us. We should be safe. But, you know, it's a crazy division.
Wednesday
won 5-0, beat Cardiff, and then they lost 4-1 today to QPR. So,
I know, it's madness.
You know, it's a weird division it's a weird division to try and predict, and I gave up trying to predict it a long time ago. But, you know, there we are.
Dave said, "Good to see Viner back in centre of defence. I think he could play it right back as well. And I think midfield of the three options that he has is the one that, you know, there's better players than him if we're going to progress." But it was a poor clearance him. It was a poor clearance by him that ended up with pretty much the last chance of the half for Forest, wasn't it? Yeah, when Yates' shot was deflected, because that could have gone anywhere, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think he headed it straight to Yates, and luckily Palmer got in the way, and it was up and over for a corner, and they were forcing lots of corners, you know, in the first half, and they seemed to be playing on top of us with Krivinovic. I thought was Krivinovic, you know, very dangerous, carrying a ball through midfield and spraying passes left and right to Mike and Knockhart.
And Garner was quite good as well in the middle for them.
Yeah.
And that's not the Garner that plays for Preston. It's a nasty piece of work.
No, that's
it?
Joel Garner, wasn't it?
That was the West Indies opening bowler.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he's Man United loanee, isn't he? So.
Yeah, James Garner.
And what a centre after Joel Garner had made. We hadn't conceded many from set pieces with Joel in the side, I'll tell you.
He wouldn't. No, he had that big smile with ultra white teeth he had. I remember him. What a player. We could talk about Somerset in the 70s for a very long time. Dave, first corner for us came on the half hour, but that was, I think it ended up with a Palmer shot, but great chance for us to take an interval lead. Masengo fouled. I'll let you talk about his overall performance as part of this piece here, but Masengo fouled, well worked free kick, Lansbury to Rowe, back to Lansbury, hit the post. But that sort of free kick is what Masengo's good at, and it was in a dangerous position, and it was a good strike, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I thought Hannoah battled away for the ball between kind of two or three of their players and managed to get a little toe away and got brought down, and then kind of well-rehearsed routine, Lansbury bends it round the wall and it thudded against the post. And it was a pretty good technique from a free kick, and a bit unlucky. It wasn't just on the other side of the post, or came back into, you know, maybe someone sniffing around in the six-yard box. So, yeah, I'm not sure we'd have gone in at half-time deserving to be ahead, because I don't think we were great at all first half. But that was probably, that last 10 minutes, as Mark said, was probably our better spell of the first half.
Yeah.
I think going on to talk about Semenyo, I think over the last three or four games, him and Han Noah have, I think, embarrassed some of the senior players with their performances.
I totally agree.
You know, for a 19 and a 21-year-old, they've been perhaps dragging the team up from being even worse than they have been. And today again he was good, just probably that little bit of end product again, which probably we said for most of the players today, but he was
a
threat.
He can get better, can't he?
He's
got the physical presence and what have you.
The key thing with Semenyo is he's a wide player, he's not a back to goal centre forward. And he could run the channels if you had somebody who was good enough to give him the ball, but we haven't got it. So we need to start from the basics. And if you had Semenyo wide right and Callum O'Dowd wide left, you wouldn't have a bad service into the forwards if you could only find somebody in midfield who could give them the flipping ball.
Yeah,
Ian,
you're talking about O'Dowder and crossing, and you know I'm not his greatest fan. In fact, I'm not a fan. And
O'Dowder crosses the ball, but he's not in a position to do it enough. That's my argument.
You wonder what
Scott
would have
Murray.
Happened this season. Yeah, you would have. What, Scott Murray? Yeah, what a crosser of the ball he was. Yeah.
Yes. Speak to Scott Murray and ask him what would have happened without Brian Tinian.
Crossfield pass to Murray. He used to ping it from one side.
Yeah, but he didn't.
From Murray to run onto. Murray to run onto.
Yeah, but Dave, he didn't pass it across the field to Murray, so Murray had three people in front of him. He used to play the ball between the left centre back and the left full back. Yeah. So Murray didn't have to beat anybody, he just had to run past him,
which he was really good at. And you think this season, and I don't know what sort of season he's had over in for Nîmes, I think it is, but how we've wanted a player like Eliasson. But let's get into the second. Yeah. Let's get into the second half. I mean, it really was City in the ascendancy without really dominating it. But Mark, on 76 minutes, probably when we were at our best, you know, we made a couple of substitutions. Pearson had gone off, and Wells, Pham and Conway had come on. But we should have had a penalty, shouldn't we? Because Worrell, he did not play the ball and he couldn't get his feet out of the way. He took the man down. And you look at what was given against us last week against Coventry in Birmingham. We got one like that given against us. We didn't get that one today, did we?
No, Worrell left his trailing leg. He definitely caught. I mean, we got the benefit of the camera behind the goal, and you could see he just caught Semenyo, and Antoine went down. Minor touch, but it was a definite penalty. And if that Coventry one, and I've slowed the film down, I still can't see a touch, but nobody complained, meaning that it probably was a penalty. That was definitely a penalty today. And I don't know where the assistant referee was positioned on the other side, whether they were unsighted. Maybe the referee was unsighted. Unfortunately, in the Championship, you don't get the benefit of VAR and you just got to suck it up, I'm afraid. But there you go.
I thought the referee today was... I put on OTIB straight after the game. I think he was in some sort of time warp and thought Nottingham Forest were champions of Europe, because every 50-50, not least a chance of a corner that we had in the very closing stages of the game, but every 50-50, you know, he gave it in favour of the big side. I mean, Dave, did you think the referee was that great today?
No, I thought he was pretty inconsistent and favoured them on any split decisions today. In fairness, you know, most people on here know I like a good old moan about the referees. I think Steve Martin's one of the better refs in the Championship, but today he was a little bit pro Forest, I thought.
Yeah, Ian, right at the death, it could have been one of our former players coming back to haunt us, because there was Luke Freeman again, a winger, lots of pace, not the greatest crosser, or not a prolific crosser, a slight difference, but he almost still won it for Forest with that volley that went just over the bar.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the ball drop into him on the far post, I thought, oh, here we go again. I like Freeman as a player. I got to be honest. I think he's got a great left foot. He gave us fantastic balance in that promotion season. I don't think he scores enough goals, but I mean, he's head and shoulders above probably anything we've got in midfield for that type of player. So, would I re-sign him? Nah, probably not. But in the right formation, which, you know, the year when we went up, we played 3-5-2, and he was on the left, centre left. I think he did a great job for us. We could have lost it. We did deserve to lose today, but I don't think really did we deserve to win. Nah, not really. I think a draw was a fair result.
Yeah, I mean, I think before the game we wanted a performance, and we didn't want to lose. So we've arrested the decline, because our home record now is like 1 point out of the last 24 on the table, which is pretty poor. But we are where we are. Mark, I mean, I don't want to do marks for the players, but let's just pick individual performances going through them. I mean, Bentley did everything that was asked of him. What did you think of Danny Simpson today, Mark? I mean, I thought he was okay, but it looks like he's got the dreaded hamstring when he pulled up. So, but your thoughts on his overall performance?
No, he's okay, Dave.
I thought it was Mark.
Is he? Yeah, Mark.
Well, that's what do you think I'm just saying about Simpson, in case you didn't hear it.
Oh, right, about cramp. It wasn't hamstring then.
Oh, it was cramp, was it?
No.
So he's okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I thought
I
thought he defended well, didn't offer anything going forward. He put his head in where it hurts. So it was a cross from Knockert, and he got in front of Knighton. and won a free kick. But you know, he went down from it, blocks and made some good blocks on the right hand side. I think Mighton, you know, was a bit of a threat in the first half, but in the second half, he defended very well, Danny Simpson. I think it's just that there's not a lot of pace there really going forward. That's what we'd like to see, overlapping fullbacks. But I think we're starting from such a low point at the moment. Like we said at the top of the show, we can't expect much in the final few games. It's very small victories. You know, a victory somewhere would be great.
But we're celebrating a 0-0 draw. It shows how bad things have got.
This is where we are. He did all right, but I don't think he's worth a deal. Is he going to take us anywhere? No.
No. Dave, I've not been the greatest praiser of Callas in terms of his capability as a skipper and a leader. I thought he had a pretty good game today. As Mark said, people putting blocks in and what have you. How did you rate him? I mean, he's going to be a mainstay of our team next season with Bentley behind him, assuming he doesn't go. But do you think he had a better game today or a captain's game?
I think he's had some decent games of late. I think what he forgot today was that he had Zach Viner alongside him. And first half, or certainly large portion of the first half, we played so deep. So I think, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, we hate the low block. I'm not sure is a low block on purpose. I think it's just a symptom of how deep Thomas Callas wants to go. And I think he's played deep anyway. He's probably been made worse by the fact that he's got Mariappa alongside him, who's obviously not a gazelle, is he? So I think he's got used to dropping off. And that creates big holes for your midfield to cover. We saw that in the opening half hour, 35 minutes, where Garner and Krivinovic found pockets and turned us. And within two or three passes, they were in our final third and causing problems. And I think second half, for me, it was noticeable how much further up the pitch he got and how many balls that they dropped just over the halfway line. They had no one there and we were picking up, and that was where we were building from. So I think that was a good thing, and I thought Callas had a pretty solid game out there. I think Danny Simpson also had a very solid game as well. I think, you know, for a guy who's not played all season, I don't think played last week for the first time.
He's got up to speed quite well.
Yeah, he did all right today. I don't think they... Mighton's a tricky little winger, but I don't think he caused Simpson too many problems. Yeah, he hit the post, but I think generally over 90 minutes, Simpson dealt with him really well.
Better maybe than Jack Hunt would have done, maybe. I don't know. We don't know. Ian, let's come to you on the midfield, and I'll let the other guys talk about midfield as well. I mean, for me and everybody, Masengo was man of the match. He's looking better than he was when he first got here, I think, now. The way he was running around the pitch, he's still not got a goal or an assist. Alongside him, I think Rennie, the final third, Gil Martin, summed it up saying he was trying to do worldly passes all the time, whereas he suggests stick to the basics. And Angela, other than that free kick, he's okay, but I don't see him being kept on. But what are your thoughts on the midfield? Yeah, and next season, Masengo, unless he gets snapped up by some other club in the summer, he's going to be a starter. So what are your thoughts on the midfield today, though, Ian?
I thought Masengo, particularly second half, his control left him in the first. I think the biggest thing with Han, and I think we're looking at a future captain there, the biggest thing that we've got to do is decide what we want him to do and what he is. So if we're going to say, right, he's the busy bloke who runs around in midfield, tackles everybody, wins the ball and keeps it simple and gives it to somebody, that's fine, but don't expect any goals and assists. If we're going to play him a bit further forward, you know, say it, I'll call it a 10 or an 8, then I think he's well capable of doing it. So with Lansbury, I thought he was decent today. He does put a foot in and he has got a decent touch on the ball. Passing radar wasn't brilliant today, but he battled away well enough. Would I retain him? No, I wouldn't retain Mariappa, and I wouldn't retain Danny Simpson if there are younger, better players that we can get. And that's the big question.
Well, that is a big question.
Palmer, I thought his passing today was awful. I got to say it, he had lots of opportunities, particularly when we moved him into the central area. He had lots of opportunities. He kept trying to go past people and it wasn't coming off for him. He had lots of opportunities to play a decent pass and he didn't do it. He just didn't do it. So I thought he had a game to forget today, to be perfectly honest, but he's the only guy in midfield that we've got that is, it's possible, I'm not going to say likely because that's stretching it, but he's the only guy we've got in midfield that's possible he's going to get a goal or an assist, because I don't see the others getting very many. And like you've already said with Han, he's played, I don't know how many games for City now, he must be getting on 40. For 50, I would guess.
Yeah, maybe. Or partial games, yeah.
And he hasn't got a goal. He hasn't got a goal. And he hasn't got an assist.
Yeah.
So we have to decide, you know, you have to, in a midfield, you have to decide who you want. You know, do you want a guy to be Jerry Gow? Or do you want him to be Brian Tinian? And then you have to say, right, is he capable of doing that? Because you can play anybody in any position, as we've proved with Naki Wells, decent footballer. But I'm sorry, if you're going to play him as a centre forward, you've got to play the ball on the ground and you've got to get crosses in. And he's not a wide player. You know, that's clear to a, it's clear to a blind man.
Yeah.
So, you know.
What do you think, Dave and Mark, Dave first? Masengo, we're eulogising over him, saying what a great player. But, you know, no goals, no assists. But do you think, you know, he's still only 19, for goodness sake, yeah? What are your thoughts, Dave, on the Masengo's performance, but the parts of his game that aren't there yet?
Yeah, I think most of us agree over the last 3, 4, 5 games, and even that little spell when he first came back under Holden, he's much improved. And from what we saw early on the season and the back end of last season, I thought he was really good when he first arrived. And he looks like he's got that kind of agility back, which he missed probably from bulking up and maybe a little bit of a COVID earlier on this season as well. And he just looks like he's getting better and better. And he's starting to influence games. I think, you know, just picking up on Ian's point there about, I think, his first kind of description around, you know, putting out fires, giving it easy. I think that's to me what Corey Smith did. But you don't necessarily have to do that from sat in front of the back four, which is not what Corey Smith did either. I think Pat was often the deeper one and Smith went around putting out fires in front of him. So I think you can get that from Masengo. But Masengo's a better footballer than Smith, I think. I think. I think what we'll see is we'll expect more out of him from not just doing what Corey Smith did, but
doing
stuff further forward as well. And I think, you know, there's a lot of emphasis in there put on goals and assists. I think the criticism of Masengo back end of last season, you know, first half of this season, was he doesn't even look like scoring or doesn't even look like assisting. I'd say that's been the change in him since Christmas, since he's come back into the side. We've actually seen him get some shots off.
We
saw him set up Wells, didn't we, with a little 1-2 couple of games back, etc. So I think there's more creativity coming out. It's actually getting on the ball further forward as well. So I think he was playing a more conservative role. He's now found his confidence, and, you know, whether it will manifest itself in, you know, ones rather than zeros in the goals or assists column, we'll wait and see. I think, you know, he got his stride pattern wrong, a bit like Gazza against Germany, didn't he, last week against Coventry, where he couldn't quite get his feet in the right place to slide in at the far post. So he's getting into position. So I think there's more to come. He's not going to be a 10 goal, 10 assist type player, I don't think.
No.
But I still think
he's a starter. The way he's playing at the moment, you'd say he'd be starting next season. I mean, Mark, Backinson came on and there was a lovely pattern of play, which I think led to another free kick we got just before the end, which didn't come to anything, or it led to two quick corners after it. But when you look at the midfielders that we've got, and, you know, if you're Jamie Patterson now, you've got to be thinking, I'm just turning 30. You know, he's not going to get a look in, really, is he? He's not going to be renewed. And you've got Naj as well, that probably will be off in the summer anyway. But we're starting to get some, with Willie. I'm not going to mention Walsh, because I think the general view is now that we don't know enough about him to even maybe worry about whether he goes. But in Masengo and Backinson and Williams, we started to get the body of a decent midfield, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, Backinson's not got a bad touch, and he just lovely touch round the corner to Semenyo, and he got fouled near the edge of the area, and it didn't come to anything. The free kick, unfortunately. But you know, when he came on, I think when he played early in the season, you know, it's like he had telescopic legs and he could make tackles. He was, he was turning the ball over in the centre of the pitch and making good bursts forward like he did against Barnsley when he scored that goal with a fortunate deflection. And we really thought he was going to kick on from there. And yeah. Then he got, taken off before the start of the Huddersfield game. And he had bad headaches, I think, which turned into COVID. And yeah. Never really looked the same player since he returned. Yeah. Yeah. But he's a bit like Semenyo, where Semenyo was a very raw, talented player. But I think he's very good going forward, and he can make defence splitting passes, no question. And yeah. Masengo's a player. What I like about him is he plays with his head up.
Yeah,
he can see,
and he wins a foul. He knows how to win a foul. I don't want to talk I don't want to talk about the youngsters today, Pearson and Conway. I thought they did okay, or Pham's little cameo for the last 20 minutes. But Naki Wells, right? We've had a couple of games with him playing in this so-called preferred position. Today, and then you've got to say about the service, yeah, and then if he's not getting the service, he's criticising the midfield and da 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 da. What do we think of Naki Wells' performance? Come to you first, Ian, just very briefly, because we've got so much other stuff to talk about. But Naki Wells, what did you think about him today? I mean, he had his usual sullen look when he got substituted, but not great.
I thought he was poor, but it was. He had no service, and this is a reoccurring theme, and I'm honestly fed up with talking about it. If you got blokes like that, they need through balls, they need crosses, they need a bit of creativity behind them, and that is what he needs, and he's just not getting it here. We might as well, to be honest, he's a player I try and sell, because he's not going to score goals for us unless Nigel Pearson really, really changes things up. And if we're going to play this low block rubbish and not dominate midfield, absolutely pointless having a bloke.
Yeah.
He also needs a big, if you're going to bang it forward in the air, and we do, he needs a big bloke to play off.
Like so he did with you Martin can't do that. Season.
Yes. Yeah. If you put Chris Martin next to him, he looks a different player. Why?
And that's another bloke who's got to be. That's another bloke who's here next season for us as well, isn't it? You know, because he's not going anywhere fast. Yeah, well, Dave.
But you've got to look at if he can stay. I keep tempering everything I say because of this season. Is if he can stay fit. Andy Boyman's back. He can play up front.
Well, yeah, he looked to be running around on the grass in the training video that
Boyman's injury is. It is one of those things. There was nobody near him, and his ACL went, right? Okay, you can't help that. But Boyman's injury history in his career has been fantastic. He's hardly had any.
Yeah. Dave, your thoughts on Naki today?
With the ball, not good enough today. You know, he was poor. But some of his movement today was excellent. And if Palmer's on form, and does slide some of those passes through, then all of a sudden Naki Wells looks a better player today.
Yeah.
But too much stuff broke down for trying to play balls into him too early. I think sometimes you've got to accept that he's going to make a really good run and he ain't going to get the ball. And I think that was our problem today. And it's been our problem for weeks and weeks and weeks, is we're too keen to play the killer ball. Therefore, we don't build up pressure. We become a very kind of like spontaneous attacking team rather than a structured attacking team. And I think what you want is good possession in that final 40 yards of the pitch where, you know, going back on what Mark said, you know, we didn't get our fullbacks forward today because we don't hold the ball long enough to get our fullbacks forward. And then, you know, you go out wide, you come back inside, and then suddenly you've got, I don't know, a Lansbury 30 yards from goal or a Palmer 30 yards from goal. And then you've got a 10-yard ball down the side of the centre-back for Wells' movement. But he isn't being given that type of service today. So, yeah, he wasn't good enough today. But I don't see that as a failed experiment that, oh God, we've got to get rid of him or we can't play him up front on his own. I think you've probably got to persevere and you've got to make the service behind him better.
Yeah, which means, you know, and what players are going to make that up next season. I mean, Mark, I'll come to you on the next topic, but before we do that, which we're going to be talking about the off-the-field stuff, that was, we avoided eight defeats in a row, which was good. Useless fact. Somebody said on OTIP, first time we've lined up with nobody other than the keeper wearing shirt number 2 to number 11 during the game today. So that was something that was unusual. The regular commentator, Mark, I'll ask you this one. It wasn't the regular, because is it Toby Osborne? He was presenting, but yeah, it sounded like he was commentating on a Grand National in the early stages of the game, wasn't it? Or he was on bloody helium or something. Did you notice that on Robin's TV? Did you notice it?
He was perhaps a bit quick. Perhaps he's been taking lessons from Jonathan Pierce, because Jonathan's voice escalates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's getting excited, I think, would probably be better. I mean, where Toby's a bit more level-headed, although he said City won a force a corner when it was a throw-in, so I didn't know what was the matter with his glasses.
Yeah.
But Renigal, the good thing, Renigal Martin's match summaries are always very good. He reads the game very well. I don't know about what the rest of
you know what he's like as a goalkeeping coach, but he was he reads the game quite well. I mean, we had Chris Hughton on the bench, assisted by
I didn't know he'd come.
Chris Hughton on the bench for Forest. Yeah, I mean, Dave, Chris Hughton, would our season have been any different under him? I mean, you know, if you look at the Forest squad, and they had a very strong bench, they got, you know, arguably you could say they got a stronger squad than we've got. They haven't got as many players as we've got. But, you know, do you think it was a case of what might have been with Hughton, or, which leads us nicely into talking about what next for Pearson, but, you know, Hughton and Forest, have they underachieved? What do you think?
No, I don't. So I guess your first question would be being, had a different season under Hughton. In my head, yes, we would have done. I think Forrest, in terms of slow start, well, he joined them after the transfer window had ended, so he basically picked up another guy's squad, and I think he made a few signings in the January window. Murray, Garner, and Knockout. So, you know, Knockout had a decentish game today. Garner probably one of their picks today. Murray, I guess he's there as, you know, I know what he can do if I need him. But that's probably been his first bit of opportunity to influence the side he puts out, really, since Christmas. And they've had some mixed results, but I think, you know, they're 4 or 5 months further down the road than where Nigel Pearson is.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we'll probably talk about this a little bit more in a moment, but I think focusing too much on results at the moment from where we've come from, you know, it's not really fair on Nigel Pearson. I think we all hoped we'd have some better results and some better performances, but I'm not sure people realise kind of how bad it had got. And I think Pearson just needs to be given time now to sort it out. I thought today was a weeding out of those people that don't want to play for the club. And if you then inject a bit of enthusiasm and energy into the 11 that do take the pitch, you stand a fighting chance of getting a result. And I think today's 0-0, sorry, I'm waffling on a little bit here, but today's 0-0 is the kind of battling performance you'd expect from a City side who are, you know, struggling in the bottom half of the table, especially against, you know, Forest side that, you know, they've got some good players, in fairness. You know, I'm not saying they're a fantastic side, but they're not a bad side either. And I thought it was the start of Pearson's era today, as I say. Got rid of the players out of the team that he doesn't really want.
That is exactly, or one of the sentiments that I felt. You know, when it got to the final whistle, I thought, actually, it looks like we're going somewhere. I mean, Ian, start of the Pearson era, I mean, you know, when is this saga gonna progress to the next stage? I mean, because there is no excuse, you know, there was no excuse for the owner. We don't have a chairman. There's no excuse for the owner not to meet with Pearson if he didn't want to. I mean, Pearson today stopped the rot, but, you know, we said when is it going to, when do you think it's going to happen, Ian, if at all?
I think it will happen once he's agreed the inward investment. The other thing he's got to establish is whether Ashton is off or not, because in fairness, all it's been is conspiracy theories and paper talk based on 2 + 2 + 2 + 2 must
You've gone quiet, Ian.
Yeah. Ian, you say conspiracy theories and paper talk, and obviously we've got to give Dave Fev some credit here as well. There's one thread, and I'm sorry, Dave, I didn't mean to plagiarise what you put on in February.
That's okay.
I did, what was it, 20,000 views. Last Sunday morning, I sat down and I wrote, Ipswich takeover complete, what does this mean for us? If you don't like conspiracy theories, stop reading now. Well, that thread that I started has had 20,000 views and 214 replies, right? I didn't realise it.
Clickbait headlines, that's what it is.
I know. But we come on to Mr. Ashton and all that stuff later. I mean, again, we get sick of saying this. It's repeat, repeat, repeat. But, you know, when is Mr. Lansdowne going to get off the pot and do something? What's he waiting for?
Well, all those things are connected. So a lot of the dominoes need to fall. So, for example, he goes to, let's say, Mark Ashton is with Steve Lansdowne. They sit down with Nigel Pearson and say, right, Nigel, we'd like to offer you a permanent contract, and his agent would be there as well or something like that, and they'll probably have a private chat before that. So Mark Ashton says, right, Nigel, you know, there's a contract, you're going to sign it. And he said, well, hang on, Mark, are you going to be here next season? Because I'd like to know that. If you are, fine, the conversation ends here. If you're off, then you want me to sign a contract, but you're leaving. Now, Steve Lansdowne more or less said John doesn't really, it doesn't want to do the job long term, is what he said. He doesn't see that, John doesn't see him being at Bristol City for the next 30 years. Like, you know, Steve.
Well, we haven't seen him here for about 8 months, have we? You know, there's no visibility.
My point is, if I'm Nigel Pearson, what I don't want to happen is to sign a 3-year contract. Mark Ashton leaves. Steve Lansdowne brings in a director of football that you don't get on with, right? Or a new CEO. Or Steve Lansdowne brings in new investment. And if you're a new investor, you want to know what you're getting for the money. So let's imagine, just for fun and a conspiracy theory, that he's actually waiting for somebody to say, yeah, I'll buy the club. So you can finish up with new CEO, new owner, and lots of other, or you could finish up with Steve Lansdowne, Mark Ashton, John Lansdowne, and away you go. So there's that much. So with all that up in the air, if I'm Nigel Pearson, I'm thinking, ooh, right, let's let it play on a little bit, and then I'll see which way the dominoes fall, and then I can make a decision. And I think to an extent they're both in that. And no one's come out and said Ashton's going or Ashton's staying. And I would have thought it would be right for Mark Ashton to say, look, there's been a lot of speculation in the paper about me going to Ipswich.
And I'm here for the long term. Well, again, why can't he? Why can't he? I mean, Why doesn't Ashton come out and say, look, I just want to quash all this speculation. I'm working with Steve, you know, we're still talking to Nigel about next season, but just let's have a statement, because there's nothing coming out. The season tickets are on sale tomorrow, and there's a window, I think, is it till such and such a date, where you have to claim your seat, otherwise it's open to everybody, right? But Mark, you know, why is there this communication blackout? And let's stop the speculation about Ashton. He just needs to come out. Never mind Pearson. Ashton should come out and say, I'm going nowhere.
Yeah, I think he should, because there's been, you know, there's been lots of rumours on websites. Obviously, we don't know who these people are or what they're saying, but, you know, it could be a real game changer, literally. For Mr. Ashton.
Very good, Mark.
He's obviously been told not to say something by Steve Lansdowne, so either way, either it's because he's seeing, you know, they're arranging his payoff or resignation, or there's an announced soon, but
or compensation for the club.
Yeah, that's a point I made, Dave.
The thing is, Ashton has been busy writing all those letters, hasn't he? Because I don't know if you received.
If he's under contract, then Steve Lansdowne. If he tells Steve Lansdowne he wants out, then Steve Lansdowne might say, "Well, you tell Ipswich to give us £1 million compensation, and you can go."
Yeah, or he can say, "Well, we're not letting you go, and you work your notice period." Yeah, because that's how you get out of paying somebody. You know, you make well. You know, it's a lack of communication at the club, and if he's chief executive, he should clarify his own position. Which then
what I think's happened, David, is he's tried to run out the door and he's done his hamstring. That's my bet.
What do you think, Dave? I mean, Nigel Pearson, I saw his pre-match, and when he talks, he sort of every question, his response is sort of like. It's not a joke, but it's sort of like we've got the players. You know, I mean, but he talks, he says all the right signals as though he wants to stay here. And you've put one of the text messages on there while we've been talking. You think Chris Powell might come in as his number two. I mean, if you're Lansdowne, you've almost got a dream ticket of you get a chance to bring in a much better recruitment leader in Steve Walsh. He was in America. He's in a Premiership team and coming here. There was talk last week about Steve Gerrard going to Villa, which would be a bit harsh on Dean Smith. But if that happened, it could free up Craig Shakespeare. Yeah. And then Nigel Pearson or maybe Chris Powell. You know, it's coming together very nicely, but we all seem to be dancing around handbags, don't we? Dave, your comment. Dave, go on.
Ian, you were about to say something.
I was gonna say it's not coming together nicely, is it? I mean, you just made all that up. What could happen? I mean,
It's there, though, isn't it? You know, you want.
Well, it's not there. You don't know that. Steve Walsh might want to stay in America. Steven Gerrard probably won't get the Villa job because Dean Smith's doing a good job there. As soon as Grealish gets back, they'll get back to winning ways again. So. A lot of that, it's more unlikely that anything will happen than it will happen. So, I mean, you know...
It's speculation.
Nigel Pearson might get struck by lightning, leaving the ground, mightn't he? I mean,
I think on the Craig Shakespeare thing, I think you'd have to have a remarkable relationship with Nigel Pearson to leave Premier League Aston Villa to come to Bristol City, I think. So I'm not necessarily buying that. You know, obviously if Smith and him were, you know, to leave Villa, then suddenly that flips on its head, doesn't it? But I think, you know, the Steve Walsh one is contracts up at Charlotte University or whatever they are, over in the States. Whether he'll come in or not, we don't know. But I think, you know, it's that whole thing. A lot of it probably might depend on what happens with Mark Ashton, because Mark Ashton's assuming the role of director of football and CEO, in effect, isn't he? And, you know, you don't need to have read many of my posts on OTIB to know what I think about recruitment. But I think if Mark Ashton does go, you've got scope to do things very differently.
Yeah.
And who knows what will happen. I think, you know, the stories seem, you know, maybe they can't quash it because there's truth in it. I think that was my little text just now.
Yeah, you know, Mendip City has said on here, may all depend on how soon the investment takeover is. Because, okay, we're speculating in about what might happen. Maybe this hiatus, and Mendip City said on here, he wouldn't be surprised if MA, JL, SL are all gone by the start of next season. Yeah? And, the conversation isn't with Nigel Pearson and this lot, it's whoever is coming in. If there is such a, you know, and again, is that Bristol City or Bristol Sport? I mean, if, you know, what do you think about that? Is it this investment? Is that what's holding things up? Dave, you first.
I don't know. I think, you know, without any firm rumours of people being interested, you know, the thing that we heard was that the consortium that are involved at Ipswich were possibly the ones that Lansdowne and Ashton were trying to bring here. But again, it's all a bit speculative, really. I still am surprised, though, that with what we're hearing about the Ipswich thing and the continued talk of Mark Ashton, or the continuation of Mark Ashton's name being brought up in those conversations. It sounds like there's no smoke without fire, doesn't it?
An executive of another EFL club, you know, and people are adding 3 and 3 and making 12 or something like that. Ian, Tomo's put on here, I couldn't make out his first, because his first message said, "My son said Palace may sniff around Crystal Palace," and then he said sniff, and then you said, "Ian, what?" And then what Tomo did mean to say, he's doing some work, he's been at Ashtergate today doing some stuff down there. But he says, Crystal Palace may look at Pearson if he is available, because Roy Hodgson, he's got to be 73, 74. I mean, you know, Pearson talks like he wants to stay here, but do you think it's suiting him and it's just us fans sort of foaming at the mouth, wanting it all to be done, that he might be considering his options? Ian, what do you say to that?
Well, I'd say if Roy Hodgson leaves Palace, I think the most likely bloke would be Eddie Howe. And I'll tell you why, because I don't think his family would want to go and live in Glasgow. I'm not 100% certain on that, but I know they didn't have a great time earlier in his career when he went up to Burnley and he couldn't wait to get back. And jumping on a plane every day to go to training is, you know, it might sound great, but that'd soon be a nose when the weather got bad. So I think there's more chance of Eddie Howe turning up there than Nigel Pearson. I think it's likely that if Roy Hodgson does step down, he might stay on as director of football, certainly until the new manager gets his feet under the table. Nigel Pearson is keeping his options open. It's a two-way street. You either sit down with a guy and say, look, you know, do you want to stay? You got to know that. And he says, yeah. I say, right, well, okay, we can give you, I don't know, a one-year rolling contract, a two-year contract, whatever it is. He's mentioned 6 to 9 windows. He's looking for at least
4 to 6.
Say 6 to 9. He didn't say
4 to 6.
He didn't say as many as Lee Johnson. I thought it was 2 to 4 windows, actually, which is 2 seasons and then a proper drive in season 3, which will be 24-25. Yeah, that's what I read.
He also said it was too late to wait until the summer. I mean,
which again is an indication that he wants to stay. It's an indication then that if you come to me and offer it me, and the terms are right, I'll stay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's more or less said since he walked through the door.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, you know, every time Steve Lansdowne does an interview, things get more confusing, don't they? You know, I mean, he didn't need to tell three peeps on the podcast that I'm actively looking for outside investment, because that got a load of hairs running. All know the club's for sale, and he never actually said that. He just said, I'm looking for somebody to put a few bob in to what we think is a football club. Then my question would have then been to him, okay, what are you looking for and what do they get for their money? So if I stick 20 million into Bristol City tomorrow, you're not allowed to take all of it and spend it on players because of financial fair play. So what do I get for my money? Apart from a seat in the ground and a nice meal on a Saturday, and I can get that for a lot less than 20 million quid, I'll tell you. So what do I need? What do I get? And if it's, well, you know, they'd have to buy into our philosophy. Our philosophy has worked in 3 areas: the ground, the academy, and the training ground. The rest of it, honestly, recruitment, medical, on the field, pretty poor, really. 4 out of 10.
Contracts, Ian. I went through, because I'm sad, as you know. I believe we have recontracted 6 first team players since Mark Ashton's been here. Yeah, of what I call proper first team player: Pack, Aidan Flint, Corey Smith, Brownhill, Patterson and O'Dowda. The other one that you can call a bit more tentative on is Taylor Moore. And that was because he took half a salary pay cut to extend his contract. I know he subsequently contracted it. So I think that's pretty shambolic, really. You know, forget recruitment. That just shows that we are buying players or bringing players in, and we're not buying them for the long term. You know,
we're spending loads of money with agents. That's why, because it's sort of like it's just fueling the.
But how do you finish up with 15, 16, well, however you look at it, because I don't normally count Chris Brunt, but he was under contract at the start of the season, out of contract at the end with an option, which we wouldn't have taken up, but he's already left the club injured, and so's Alfie Mawson. Now, how do you finish up with 15, 16 players out of contract, unless you want to? And if you want to, my question would be, why do you want
why
to?
Why do you
want to? I think Ian on that
you could flog it.
Yeah, you could pick any one of those dozen or so out of contract players and say, if we wanted to sign them up because we thought they were good enough to recontract, we'd have done it. So therefore, all we've done is postpone the agony. We've lessened our chances of getting a small fee and a save of a year's wages by doing bugger all about it. And that's to me a shocking strategy.
Those players, good or bad, cost us 15 million quid.
Yeah.
It's not like they cost us £1 million, all of them. They cost us £15 million and we're letting them walk out the club for absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I don't get it. If the club had explained it, I'd be delighted to listen.
Mark, your thoughts? You've been sitting there listening patiently in the background. I mean, somebody said here that we're a conspiracy obsessed podcast. AJ,
yep.
AJ, it's not conspiracy. It's speculation. There's a subtle difference. But Mark, what are your thoughts? We need to wrap up in a moment. But
I think most of our recruitment. I mean, since apart from Adam Webster, where we got fantastic value. You know, bought him. I think we bought him for about four, didn't we? And we sold him for 20 million. It's been awful. And I mean, you've only got to look at Barnsley. What Barnsley have done, they replaced the manager this season and they got a team run on a shoestring, brought in players for peanuts because I think they got a very good director of football in Daniel. I don't know what his surname is. Dave or
Kane.
Ian probably know. He's done excellent recruitment and you buy players for certain positions and it's worked. And they won again today. Now they're 5 points clear of seventh place and they're very good. Candidates to get in the playoffs, and well done to them. And when we played him at the start of the season, he looked like a team that were going in the opposite direction. Now, you know, how things can change very quickly. So you don't have to spend a lot of money to recruit. Norwich have done it, probably play their players better, but they can recruit very well. So it shows you can do it.
And their chief executive at Barnsley, I think, is a 34-year-old who's sort of like bright, up-and-coming, challenging sort of bloke without some of the baggage that those of us have looked back into Mark Ashton's history. You know, you want some clarity. I feel sorry for Steve actually, because Steve Lansdowne because you know he's tried to delegate this to his son, the being the chairman bit, and he's pretty much washed his hands over it. So Dad has blown $250 million, if you look at infrastructure and funding losses, he's blown $250 million in the last 18 years. And that's on the back of his son saying, Dad, let's get involved in Bristol City. And Steve isn't a passionate Bristol City fan like we are. I'm not saying he's not invested, but he's invested financially. Yeah. And here it all is, you know, he's had to put up with COVID. You don't know how many season tickets he's going to get. You know, he's been a sucker for a smooth talking guy, which was obviously admitted on the Three Peaks podcast that he let Lee Johnson talk him into hiring him. He's let Ashton pretty much run the club for the last 2 years on all matters recruitment and ever increasing power base, you know, and he's coming up to 70. He wants a bit of an easy life, so maybe that's the reason why he is saying, I don't want this, let's get somebody else's money for the football part only.
the thing is, and where the supporters are concerned, how soon is he going to appoint Nigel Pearson? The longer this saga goes on, is he saying, I want us to be mathematically safe, in which case it will take a few weeks? Because we run the risk of making Nigel Pearson think, well, if they're not committed, I'm not committed, I'm looking elsewhere. Pearson said the end of the season's too late. How soon is now, I suppose you could say? Yeah. Sign the guy. What are we waiting for? Get some certainty. The players will know who's going to be in charge next season. The fans will certainly buy season tickets if Pearson's in charge. We're not going to be expecting to be challenging, make the top six, but we know that we'll be competitive and we'll win more games than we lose.
Well,
and we'll
play We got four more weekends of football. Is that right? Yeah, four more weekends and a weekend. And a weekend fixture, and everybody would feel a lot happier if the manager thing was sorted, yeah, and he could go in with the last three games, because we all remember, was it 12 years ago when we got 11 years ago when Steve Coppell came, yeah, and he was signed up before the end of the season
in April, and he went off for a holiday.
And if he'd have turned up at Ashton Gate for the last home match of that season and just done a little walk around the pitch, what would have happened there? I'm sure that would have put 1,500 people extra on the season ticket. But he came, he didn't. He went over to America to see his son, prearranged something. And then we all know how well that went with Coppell. Because we've got to have, Pearson's right when he says it's too late. But the way we're going, if we don't get him signed up, even if it's Pearson, you know, if they leave it till 5 o'clock after the Brentford game, and is that a Sunday midday kickoff or is it
Saturday?
It's Saturday. They used to play them on Sunday. We've got to get it sorted, yeah. And that's not conspiracies. We just need some direction from somebody, yeah. And it's not coming. The chief exec, in the absence of the chairman, the chief exec should be saying stuff, not the owner who. Okay, he makes all the decisions, but it seems that everything is stopping at his door at the moment. I mean, let's wrap it up. Final point from each of you. Ian, your thought. Who's up next? Who have we got next? Is it Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah.
Up there? Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday next Saturday.
That's a game up there that, we take another 0-0 draw from that, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Do you think, Ian, Sheffield Wednesday, that'd be a good result?
I think you need what we need. Yeah, I mean, I'd take 5-0 draws from now to the rest of the season. I don't think I'd enjoy them, but I'd like to see us play some football and have a bit of shape. That's what I'd like. And I think I'd like to hear from, you know, Mark Ashton, and Mark can tell us about the Lansdowne family. Maggie. John. Tiddles Lee. Tiddles the cat. Tiddles Lee. The cat. Yeah. Mark can tell us all about those and the DNA. He never shuts anywhere else, does he? Have I mentioned our high performance centre? Have I told you about that?
Our high all performance in, wasn't it?
Centre. Yeah. We've only got that because of Steve, Maggie, John, Tiddles the cat, and the rest of the Lansdowns.
Is this your impression of Mark Ashton now, Ian?
Yes.
Nobody does support like what they have done.
All right. Look, this is... No. Mark, you're Dave, the final word goes with Dave in a second, actually, because that's the sensible one. Mark, a draw at Sheffield Wednesday, that will totally banish. They actually said on Robin's TV today that, you know, if we won this, it was still keeping alive our playoff chance. I mean, I think that was the way the results were. But a draw at Sheffield Wednesday...
That was comical Ali, wasn't it?
Acceptable result this stage.
Yeah, it's gonna be physical game. Maybe play Fam for this one. Fam's goodbye tour. This could be the good time to play him. Lots of crosses into the box are going to be physical. You know, players like Cameron Patterson. You know, elbows flying everywhere. Jordan Rhodes tumbling around. Yeah. I think we could nick it, but let's be. I think we put about a bit today as well. Even Henry Lambert.
Yeah, no, we're giving lots of free kicks.
Good
away.
Tackles on
got
the
more
edge
free
of the area.
Gave away more free kicks than we got shots in the game. Never mind shots on the target. Final word with you,
Captain Sensible.
Captain Sensible, Dave.
What do you want me to talk about?
I'll ask you two questions. Do you think we'll get movement this week and is a draw at Sheffield Wednesday an okay result? Or don't results matter now? Is it just performances? Because we ain't going down.
Will we get a result Wednesday? I think we might get a 0-0 or a 1-1. I think we're probably playing for draws, to be honest, and just try and get a semblance of shape and performance back, to be honest. Will we see some movement on the Pearson front this week? Don't know. I thought we would have done in the international break. The fact we didn't, and then the kind of bombshell that, you know, we're waiting for Steve to fly over to meet him. I actually did have a little look at the Guernsey COVID travel restrictions on Bailiwick Airport if you're a private flight operator, and it didn't seem very clear what you could do, but I'm sure it did say if it's for work purposes you can. So yeah. It's early in the tax year as well, so he'll have to cut out a visit some other time, won't he?
Dave, I've got some breaking news, mate. I got some breaking news, genuine breaking news. The game against Wednesday won't be next Saturday, and I feared this earlier on. They're moving all the games because of the funeral.
Well, that's right. Now,
Jesus Christ.
Prince Philip, Dave. I keep telling you that.
Christ was born after him.
In fairness, I think that there hasn't been enough coverage of the fact that Prince Philip's died. I mean, it came as a shock to me.
I don't think there's been enough
coverage on the BBC or Sky,
we can't talk about a Wednesday.
We want more HNM, less HRH. Yeah, is that what we're saying?
Friday or Sunday, won't it? Something like that. So
yeah, and there's no
Wednesday on Sunday.
Bring the kick off.
Bring it forward. 12 o'clock.
Yeah, they're true, but they haven't.
Rotherham can play a double header, can't they, on one of those days?
Played double fixtures in the Crystal Sunday League years ago.
Well, I don't know. It's only if they pass their lateral flow test, because they are a bit suspect, aren't they?
The fact that there's no crowds at any of these games makes it really easy to reschedule them, and you could, because there's no.
Well, the thing is, they had a 2-minute silence. Who noticed?
Yeah. At least City didn't get that wrong, like they did for the war thing when it was meant to be a 2-minute silence and everybody started clapping. Right, next week, right, I may well be doing another one of my in conversation pieces with, I won't say who, right, but that'll
be. It's not Roy Hodgson, is it?
No, it's not Roy. It's not Roy Hodgson.
I think he's sharp. Roy is incredibly excited to be on the pod next week.
There we go.
With David. Because he's very Rooney's coming on with me and Frank Lampard, he'll be here next week as well. Wilfred Zaha.
All right, we'll do a special Ian does impression.
Ian is available for weddings, funerals, and bar mitzvahs. Ring after hours.
But look, next week, if there's any developments to do with takeovers or Pearson, we'll do one sometime. We'll let people know when we.
He'll be on 20 minutes. He'll be on Sound City on Monday. Jeff, always here for you.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. Tea time. It's tea time. It's time to go and get some food. Mike Yar would eat your heart out. The new Joe Longford.
You got to cross into the other wing, David, haven't you? Right. It's the cook.
Good night, everybody. Those of you that are still with us, it's not been a conspiracy show. It's been talking about a game where City arrested the decline, the start of somebody's era. Guys, have a great weekend, what's left of it, and we'll get this uploaded. Thanks to everybody that was listening. I think there's about 40 of you left in the studio, 114 people, so that means 70 people listen for a bit and then bug it off. But never mind, we don't care, we enjoy it, and we look forward to everybody being back next time we do one, whenever that is. All right, all the best, boys.
Top hosting.
Everybody.
God bless.
Cheers.
Stay safe, everybody. Keep washing those hands.